My guest at this time is Alan Riskin. He's a longtime editor at Human Events and the son of Maury Riskin, a Hollywood writer in the golden age of movies. Alan is also the author of the brand new book, Hollywood Traitors, Blacklisted Screenwriters, Agents of Stalin, Allies of Hitler. The issue of communists in Hollywood is back in the news as a movie is in the works to celebrate Dalton Trumbo, a filmmaker labeled as a communist in the 1950s, but is who is being lauded in the new film as a champion of free speech. We'll discuss that and more for the next few minutes. And Alan, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Obviously, the Hollywood investigation into communism was part of the overall investigation into communism through the House Un-American Activities Committee, the late 40s and 50s. One of the general notions that's out there for public consumption right now is that ultimately there either weren't any or very, very few communists who were active at all in Hollywood. What does your research show?
Well, my research, for two reasons, I guess, that I think that there were lots of communists in Hollywood. And I'm talking about hardcore communists, people who were whose allegiance was to the Soviet Union and Joe Stalin. And there isn't any question about it. Even a player in England who are basically on the liberal side admit that there were at least 300 people who, or 200, over 200 people who were members of the Communist Party in Hollywood. But what I'm talking about is that my dad, one of the reasons I wrote the book was to vindicate my dad, who was an anti-communist in Hollywood. I mean, he was a major screenwriter. He did a number of about 50 movies in all in Hollywood, and he did a number of Marx Brothers movies. And he, when he came out to Hollywood, I mean, a lot of people actually, conservatives, believe him as a conservative because he helped found National Review. He had a nationally syndicated column that was conservative. But when he came out to Hollywood in the mid-1930s, he was a liberal. Some of his best friends were members of the American Civil Liberties Union, and Norman Thomas, a big socialist, he was one of his friends. But my dad was never tempted by communism, and he joined the Screenwriters Guild. He believed in the guild, and he found there that he fought the communists there, and these people were hardcore communists, loyal to the Soviet Union, and a number of these people became part of, famously later, the Hollywood Ten that Hollywood weeps over. But each and every one of the members of the Hollywood Ten, and this is not really well known, each and every one at the time, it was in 1947 when the hearings were held, were members of the Communist Party and were loyal to Stalin and were trying. And you have to remember then that super liberals at that time, like the Americans for Democratic Action and even the ACLU, were barring communists from their organization because they knew that Stalin was the bad guy. He had taken over Eastern Europe, trying to take over Western Europe. And the communists, in Hollywood in particular, during the Cold War, were always on the side of Stalin. And there isn't any question about that. And in 1944, my dad and Walt Disney, Sam Wood, who was a famous director, formed the Motion Picture Alliance. And the reason they did that was because the communists at that time looked as if they had taken over Hollywood. They were embedded in the guilds and the unions, and the Screenwriters Guild, which my dad had belonged to, the flagship publication, was being edited by Dalton Trumbo, was a famous communist, no question about it. He had later acknowledged that he was a communist, and he turned it into the screenwriter, which was a major publication, into a communist publication.
Alan, what was so appealing to so many people in Hollywood at that time? Obviously, most of the country wasn't super sympathetic to the communists, even when we were allied with them in World War II. So what was so appealing to the folks in Hollywood about it?
Well, the point is you have to remember that it wasn't just in Hollywood, of course. I mean, the point, it was all through the United States. There was a communist party, and the point is that there were, I don't know, maybe 85,000, 100,000 people who were maybe hardcore communists, even during during the Cold War. And the fact is that communism has a special appeal. There isn't any question about it. I mean, you know, these people were hardcore. They were revolutionaries. They actually wanted to overthrow the government by force and violence. And you can't, you know, I can't, you know, what makes people join ISIS? You know, that kind of thing. There was an ideology there that people believed in. They believed that capitalism was terrible. It had to be overthrown, and they wanted to actually see it overthrown. I mean, the writers actually in 1935, formed this group, the League of American Writers, where so many of these people came to, they were novelists and playwrights and everything else, but many of these people came to Hollywood. And when the League of American Writers was formed, their purpose was to use their art as a weapon. That's what they call art as a weapon, and the purpose was to destroy the American government as it existed, get rid of the capitalist system, and impose a communist system. And I'm not making this up. I mean, this is in, I mean, what I got this from was from actually Hollywood, from communist documents. I mean, these are their proceedings. And you can get a lot of from official documents like the Daily Worker and other communist publications. I mean, it really wasn't much of a secret.
How much did it show up in the films?
What really happened is that there were a number of communists in Hollywood, and they, as I said, they looked as if they had control by 1944, and as the communist writers were actually, of course, we were allied with the Soviet Union, they could get away with something, but nevertheless, all these films were being made that were saying how wonderful Joe Stalin was. It wasn't just like we were allied with the Soviets again. I mean, a documentary could be made, for instance, about Stalingrad, which I wouldn't have been opposed to. But nevertheless, the kind of things that were coming out, and they were written by hardcore communists like John Howard Lawson, who was head of the Communist Party in Hollywood, and Alva Bessie, who had fought on the Soviet side in Spain during the Spanish Civil War. You had Paul Jericho, who would become head of the Communist Party. And there were all these various films. I mean, Song of Russia, Mission to Moscow, you had Action in the North Atlantic, you had Blockade, and all of them. And Mission to Moscow, which was written by Howard Koch, who had done Casablanca. And he's a terrific writer. I love Casablanca. But the fact is, Koch was a fellow traveler. He was actually, you call him a communist without without a party card. He was married to a communist, and he did. And he had Jay Leda, who was a communist and a Soviet, basically a Soviet agent, and he was a technical advisor to him on Mission to Moscow, which was probably the most pro-Moscow, pro-Soviet film ever made, and made Stalin into some sort of, the wisest statesman on the planet. But everything Stalin did was wonderful. And even it was so bad that even The Nation magazine, which was pro-Soviet, people, they actually said it was a whitewash of Stalin, even pro-Soviet, because I think in order to have credibility, even pro-Soviet publications, pro-Soviet authors actually denounced the film. But the fact is they got all that stuff into their film, and it was all pro-Soviet, pro-Stalin, and their purpose, obviously, was to help brainwash Americans into thinking that Stalin was their ally. And, of course, their purpose also was to make certain that the United States would shovel all this aid into the Soviet Union during World War II. And, of course, people forget that it was actually the Soviet, the Hitler-Stalin Pact, which triggered World War II. I mean, Soviet Union, made its deal with Stalin in 1939, and they switched sides. They'd been anti-communist, anti-Hitler, and suddenly, with the pact, they suddenly became pro-Hitler. And they always liked to portray themselves, these communists in Hollywood, and Hollywood liked to portray them as anti-fascist. They were on the side of Hitler when he invaded Poland, when the next year when he conquered Western Europe, and when he was bombing England. The only reason they changed, the only reason they became anti-Hitler was because Hitler double-crossed Stalin and invaded the Soviet Union in June of 1941.
What's the lesson today? Now it's nearly 70 years after those 1947 hearings and so forth. We just talked in the open about how there's a movie telling the Dalton Trumbo story from a very different perspective than you have in the book. So what's the lesson about how history remembers this era and remembers it not nearly the way that the documentation that you have in the book suggests it should be remembered?
Well, my hope is that this book at least starts a conversation, if nothing else. And the point is that people will go back to original documents. They will go back to the hearings, the 1947 hearings, and all that. And then they will realize, if they go back to original documentation, that that in fact they will get a different perspective. And I think it has to be talked about. And the point is what is upsetting. And so I like people to at least know. I mean, I think people should know history and the accuracy of the history. And I think that's important, just for its own sake. But there's also this idea, which is you mentioned, is that Hollywood today continues to actually laud all these Hollywood communists, especially the Hollywood 10, each of whom was a communist, only one of whom actually ever renounced communism, Stalin, and they continued to laud them all the time. I was at a hearing, at a meeting in Beverly Hills in 1997, in which two communists, one was a member of the Hollywood 10, no question they were communists, hardcore, and had been for a long time, and the point is they were given First Amendment awards. Now, the point is, whatever you want to say about communists, they're never for the First Amendment. And now, as you point out, you've got, well, you had John Howard Lawson. He was being memorialized in some fashion in the Majestic, which was Jim Carrey is in there, and they name a wonderful town after John Howard Lawson, who was head of the Communist Party in Hollywood, and was the enforcer of the Stalinist line, and died a Stalinist. And they give him, and they make him some sort of hero. They name a town after him, this wonderful town after him, and you know, have him basically as some sort of a hero. And now they're doing it with Dalton Trumbull. And as I said, Trumbull himself acknowledged, even to his biographers, that he was a communist, and he said he joined in 43, might as well have been a communist a decade earlier, and he said he never regretted, never regretted. And he was a guy, I mean, I have a manuscript of his, or a script of his anyway, in which he never got to the screen, in which he tells you how wonderful Kim Il-sung's North Korea was. This is 1950 when it invaded South Korea, that Kim Il-sung was the good guy. And when it invaded South Korea, I mean, even the United Nations said, you know, by the way, they were the aggressor force. And, of course, we lost, maybe 40,000 people or something like that in terms of soldiers and all that being killed in the Korea War. And the point is that Trumbull and those people were doing everything they could to undermine that policy, any kind of a policy that would challenge Stalin. And actually, there's a new book out with Larry Saplier and Christopher Trumbull, who died, and who was very obviously for his father in things that I've read about him in the past. But even that book, if you read it, there's all sorts of concessions made about how bad Trumbull, at least from my perspective, certainly how bad Trumbull was. I mean, he didn't even like Martin Luther King because he felt he was too timid, and he wanted more people like Nat Turner. Those should be the kinds of people who, you know, who led a slave rebellion in Virginia. He thought he was the kind of person that you needed in the United States. And this was after Martin Luther King, through his nonviolent demonstrations, had given us give us the 1964 and 1965 civil rights law. I mean, he'd been effective, and yet somehow Trumbull, in his book, denounces King.
Alan, just about 60 seconds left in our conversation. We've obviously talked about how Hollywood still sort of reveres the folks from that day and time. We know that there's obviously still a huge chunk of Hollywood that leans to the left. There's a lot of agenda-driven type material that's produced there. Do you get the sense there are still active communists there now?
Well, there is. You have to say there's a difference. Sure, there are people like, you know, I don't know, there are communist types, you know, like Sean Penn. I mean, I go through just the screenwriters. But the fact is that there's Sean Penn. I mean, they like, you know, Castro. There are all these people who still love Castro, and they love what Hugo Chavez and all of that. So there are a number of people like that, no question about it. And but there was a little bit of a difference in the. I mean, there's a little bit of a difference, or at least to me, it's important difference is that. At least in the 30s and then in the 40s and the 50s, these people were agents of a foreign government designed to destroy us. I mean, there's a little bit of difference between that and just, you know, popping off and saying, well, I'm a left-winger and all the rest of it. I just think that I think that's an important difference, even though it's very clear that Hollywood, at least, that Hollywood is filled with people who are left-winger, who are on the left. But at least, you know, this thing, the interview, I saw the interview done by liberals and all the rest of it, and yet it still denounces North Korea, and it denounces Kim Il-sung, and you know, the person that Dalton Trumbull, you know, was favored. And it was a comedy and all that, but it actually, you know, goes after the present bozo, you know, the guy that's head of North Korea. But nevertheless, it also attacks his father and attacks Kim Il-sung. And here is Trumbull saying, you know, and all the communists in Hollywood. I mean, there were all these communists in Hollywood who were praising Kim Il-sung's North Korea. And in fact, there was a number of the Hollywood 10. What happened was that after They went to the Hollywood town. What happened was that they refused to answer questions before the committee as to whether they were communists. As a result, they had to serve jail and contempt. And after that, the people like Herbert Biberman and others formed this group, which actually asked Trumbo to do this film on North Korea, and telling him and instructing him to do this wonderful film about North Korea and how wonderful it was.
Alan, we'll have to call time there. Thank you, sir, very much for your work, and thank you very much for being with us today.
Well, thank you.
Alan Riskin, longtime editor at Human Events, the son of Maury Riskin, a prolific Hollywood screenwriter in the golden age of Hollywood. Alan is also the author of the new book, Hollywood Traitors, Blacklisted Screenwriters, Agents of Stalin, Allies of Hitler. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.